Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
A funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures up down 22, and NASDAQ futures down 120, but nobody cares about that. Where's GameStop? GameStop is up 159 at 354, so back from the, wherever it was, back from the cemetery. I won't say the dead, back from the cemetery. Strange stuff.
Back from timeout.
Well, it's,
what happened yesterday?
Well,
we all got a chance. All of us big short sellers got a chance to get out of GameStop stock for a little while.
Well, I'll tell you what. A lot of stuff here that, boy, I've been getting, questions all over the place. And I'd say this. I've been doing this for a long time. I have seen some stuff that I don't think I've ever seen before. The idea that the thing would stop trading yesterday, yet every once in a while the stock price would move where you couldn't trade it. I've never seen that. I mean, it looked like they were... It'd be stopped, say it, I'll pick a number, at 220, and all of a sudden it's stopped and it's 185. And I'm like, I've never seen that. Evidently they were opening it periodically for like a 10 seconds or a minute, or I don't really know, but I've never seen the stock. But if you're just staring at the screen, and my IB screen here, where I got all these billion stocks, it comes out, it's bright pink if it stopped trading. Was pink the whole way, and the thing kept moving. So we're trying to figure out here what the hell is going on. And one of my guys said he was staring at it. The thing actually opened for like a nanosecond. The price changed, and it went pink again. I don't know what that is. I mean, so I don't really appreciate not being able to answer questions. So I'm calling people that are still on boards and stuff on these exchanges. I go, what the hell is going on? They're like, we don't know. Well, two things seem to enter the mix. Is one is, if something gets incredibly busy, what happens is, and it's, I'll be not be very detailed on this because it's pretty complicated. If you do an option trade, you got to pay for it the next day. So it's T plus one. If a stock trade, it used to be like T plus four or five when I started, but you could not pay a stock trade like for a while. And, but now it's T plus like two. Or if you buy stock, you got 2 days to send it into your clearing firm. It used to be three, and I think they just went to two again. There's more back office stuff than I... Normally, that's not a problem. If there's a difference in cash with clearing from paying out or paying in, it's just a day lag, and they usually have a credit line that covers that pretty easily. So it could be that some of these firms ran into credit problems. Now, I just was reading this morning that Robinhood, gained a... went out for investors, invested $1 billion last night. So that would seem to indicate that there must have been some cash flow problems. Not to mention, hopefully they weren't dumb enough to let people buy the stock, and send in the check. Because if you're down $100, you might not send it in. But hopefully they weren't dumb enough to do trades for people without having the money when the thing is doing this. I mean, that you...
You want to take bets?
I'll bet they, I'm saying, you have to give everybody, when you fill out an account form, I mean, you got to put an awful lot of stuff down there. It's not that they can't find you. But, I mean, I could see some guy buying 100 shares at 500, and before he even gets off before he shuts his phone off, the thing's down 300. But, I mean, yesterday, we were doing a show, Kevin. Right before the show, Frank called in and said that it had just traded like 518 or something, like maybe at 5:45 or 5:30, somewhere right before the show. And we started the show, it was 470, we were done, it was 270. So somebody is down, $260, $250 on a trade in 2 hours and a half. I mean, you know, I don't know, that seems like a lot. But the interesting part here is, I mean, I mentioned yesterday that I thought that at 4-something, that the risk now is on the part of the longs, not necessarily the shorts. And, you know, when this is all over, it could be that the shorts get bleeped and the longs get bleeped. Because, you know, don't think for a second that the people who started this are philanthropic. In order for them, if they go and buy this stuff at $20 because it's shorted, when I say it's shorted, these guys, I think, had something like, I'm not positive on this, the entire float was shorted at least, maybe even 130%, which I don't know how you get to there. That's the first place that I would investigate if I was doing an investigation. How exactly did the short interest get that big? Because we have to locate, before, I mean, if you had an account at PTI, Kevin, we could short something for you today. If it's available to borrow, we have to notify, we have to arrange to borrow it before that you short it. The only people that can just short stuff, market makers. But even then, they're doing it just to make a market. They shouldn't be doing it. I mean, market makers don't usually take that kind of a position in a stock. So, unless they, you know, are market makers by name only. So, at some point, the person who bought it at 20, and now it's at 200, and I'm not saying the people on Reddit are doing this, but somebody has to encourage somebody to buy it at 210 so they can get out, right? So, at some point, the last man in is the guy who gets screwed.
Always.
Yeah, but the last man in might be the short seller.
Or maybe last man out.
Right, but the romance of it is the last man who to buy the thing is a short seller because he had to, and good for him, we stuck it basically where the sun don't shine on him. But it may not be. It may be some retail person who caught up in the frenzy, and he could be the last buyer. So you don't really know until the end of the day. But the last thing I want to see happen is some new trader taking a 30 grand hit into something like this, and all of a sudden he's 10 years to get it off his taxes. That's, you know, it's one of my common themes. I don't want that happening for somebody who's 25 years old, but I'll bet it will.
Yeah, probably will.
So that's what that all is. And then of course, your two favorite people actually were agreeing. We need more regulation. AOC and Cruz. Now there is some strange bedfellows.
I saw on Twitter yesterday, we've all been looking for, you know, the country's so politically divided, what can bring us all together? And this is the first thing that brought everyone together. Was yesterday with the fiasco with Robin Hood and everything else.
Well then, what's her name? Warren comes in. Kevin, I can't even, I wouldn't want her, that lady, over at Thanksgiving. She gets into these frenzies. But the logic to me, that she could never talk to SPAC. I mean, not that I'm SPAC, but the whole point is, the regulators did a horse bleep job, yet we need more regulation. That is such a non-following statement to me. I can't, you know.
Yeah, what you're really saying is government can't handle this, so let's have more government.
Yeah, and pay more people and pay more, and then somebody, this British guy who's on CNBC, he's actually, you know, he's pretty bright. He kept asking, well, what exactly do you think happened? Well, I don't know. We need an investigation. And whatever the investigation shows, we need more regulation. And the guy said, what if no rules were broken? Well, then we need more rules. It's like she had no idea what she was talking about. Just to come on the air. I'm in the industry for 40-some years. I don't, and I would need to find out exactly who was short and what and why, and did they break any rules. That's kind of where I would start. You know, how the hell did this thing get to be? But they don't seem to care. They had Bob Ackman. I can't remember Carl Will when he comes on. I can't remember the stock that Bob Ackman and who's the other knucklehead? The big long guy. He just kind of retired. He was on. I just told you the name, Manny. What the hell is his name? Anyway, the two of them would be on at CNBC arguing back and forth. But Ackman is not above.
Ackman and Icon?
Icon.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, Ackman is not above coming on, and I'm giving him like 45 minutes airtime to say how horse bleep a company is and the chairman's screwing up and the books are all cooked when he's already got his massive short position. I mean, they can't prove any of that. I mean, there's been no litigation. There's been nothing. It's this guy's opinion and how bad somebody is. I mean, it's like slander, for God's sake. And he's already got some massive short position. I mean, that to me, I don't know where that comes from. I mean, some of these guys, they absolutely torpedo these companies. And they cause an investigation because the regulators are not that smart. If somebody comes out and says this company's cooking the books, you can cause these people to start doing an investigation. Then your next thing is, guess what? The SEC is looking at them. Well, they're looking at them because you just accused them of something, which may be right, may not be. But this has no business on. You talk about what goes on Twitter and what goes on Facebook. That has no business on national financial TV.
And what's going on the accepted, established media outlets?
I mean, I'm sitting there listening to this. I'm going, wait a minute. They're letting this guy essentially talk his position for 45 minutes, accuse people of stuff, and they're not even there to defend themselves? And then they'll say stuff like, well, we asked Kevin O'Neill if he wanted to come on, and he can't. But it could be earnings. It could be you might be in a quiet period. No, they never once mention, oh, by the way, that XYZ Corp's in a quiet period and the chairman can't come on. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I really, and then the weird part is, for a guy like me, who's registered and everything, I'm guessing that once in a while FINRA listens to the show. When they come in here for the audit, they're all over it. I mean, what do I say that's wrong? I mean, I never give any investment advice. I never say, gee, this guy's been playing with little boys and he's the chairman of this company. I just shorted it, by the way. You should sell it too. I mean, I would never do that. Even if I thought I was right. That's a job for law enforcement, not me. Anyway, it's just, I think these people are amoral, Kevin. I mean, and should there be rules? But the thing is, the rules have always, get a load of this. Since we're on this subject. Maybe I got a 2-minute story. When Dr. J and I were both on the board of the SIBO, and Jan became a specialist in a bunch of different stocks, right? I was still trading the OEX. And Jan could never get a straight story on how exactly shorting stock worked and the buy-ins worked. I mean, it's pretty complicated. So, because he was on the board and made enough noise, they reluctantly told the general counsel, come back with a report on exactly how this works. Kevin, Matty, you would never... The report came back, 20 pages long. It was the most disgusting thing. I think it all came down to the people who knew how to game the system. So, say I, for instance, was trading IBM or something. I mean, I did stuff all around the rest of the floor, even though I traded in OEX. Suppose I was long, 300 options and short 150,000 shares of stock. Okay, well, I'm hedging the position, so... And all of a sudden, if IBM came hard to borrow, they would issue me a buy-in notice, okay? So me being the dummy that I am, would look at the notice, and I'd buy some in, right? like that's what they want me to do, I'll do it. Well, it turns out that there's the first, second, third, and fourth buy-in notice, and the people who buy it in are the schlumps like me, and the guys who know the game, like the specialists and stuff, they totally ignore their buy-in notice. Until they really get to them, and the fifth one would say, "Hey, look, we got to make you buy the stuff in." And what they would do, they would go out and they'd buy the stock in, and then they'd buy some puts. They'd buy the stock and buy the puts, and immediately exercise the puts back into the short position the same day. So now it was a new short position. So they, in essence, never really bought anything in. So they bought something in, but their position never changed. So they would go to you and they'd say, the stock's trading 200. Hey, Kevin, I want to buy the 250 puts, which, of course, are parity, and I'll buy the stock from you. And I'll pay you, I'll pay you 4 cents for the trade. And I don't have a position there. I'll go, sure, I'll do that. I'll do the 4 cents, knowing full well that it's a scam trade. And all of a sudden, I have the trade on. The next morning, I get assigned on the put, so I have no position. Right? But meanwhile, the other guy, he now is back into a short position on the stock. And there's another 5 days for them to give them notice one, notice two, notice three. And this could go on like forever. And yet some people, when it started to happen, some people actually really got in trouble for it. And it was a lot of times it was the small specialists and the people who were doing the other side of the trade who, they had no idea what the motivation, you suspected what the motivation was, but the trade wasn't illegal. Those people got in trouble and some got suspended. But miraculously, none of the really big people ever really got in trouble. They're still there. I mean, if Elizabeth Warren really wants to go down this road, I'll be on her team. But I tell you what, there's going to be some stuff she's going to bump into and people she doesn't want to hurt that she's going to bump into.
Yeah, and the people that wrote her checks.
Yeah. So this outrage. I mean, what's the outrage about? I mean, does anybody really care if these guys that are short in this thing get it stuck where the sun don't shine, and if somebody else gleefully buys some stack at 400 thinking he's sticking to somebody else, and two minutes later it's 200. Hey, you know, sometimes when you're that dumb, you're that dumb. I mean, what can I tell you?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the point of investing? Is you're supposed to be informed, you're supposed to do research and cover it. And I'm asking that as a rhetorical question.
Well, but yeah, but every time you make a buy, somebody sells it to you. How do you know you're smarter than that guy?
Well, I just am.
Yeah, well, that's right. You just are. When I asked that at a seminar, you should see
the wonderful way to live.
You should see when I asked that at a seminar. You should see the looks I get. I said, "You've done your homework. You bought your IBM. It's going up." Well, yeah, I got three newsletter writers telling me, you know, it's a buy. I said, "Well, who's the guy that sold it to you? Is he a blubbering idiot? What do you mean? I just bought it." No, you bought it from someone. No, I just, you know, call my broker. You bought it. You bought 100 shares. Somebody sold you 100 shares. Oh. Well, first of all, you should at least know that reality, right? If you're going to buy a stock, somebody's selling it to you. Who's the somebody? Is it always an idiot? You're the always smart guy? You get a whole different view of trading.
Like I said, it's a wonderful perspective to have on life, at least until the day it gets shattered.
Well, that's why when you talk to somebody like me, it sounds weird, but it's different. I mean, Maddie's heard me enough to say, if Maddie Weber was a market maker tomorrow, when he goes down, he's going to make a market in, I'll pick a stock here, Home Depot. The thing's trading 278. So somebody's going to say, okay, Matt, 285 calls. And he's going to say, you know, 4 to 1/4 or something, or 4 to 1/8. And the person's going to say, I'll buy 25. So Matty immediately learns. He's not a buyer or seller. He's a market maker. But if three people in a row come by and all are buying calls, he knows that he better start hedging pretty quick, or because somebody seems to know something and he doesn't. So as a market maker, you never dream, since you don't choose the trade, you never dream that you're smarter than the guy on the other side. That's why it's up to you to hedge it or do something with it. And at the end of the day, the 1/8 or 1/4 edge you're getting, or now it's probably a couple of cents, is enough to make up for the clunkers. And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But by and large, only retail people are arrogant enough to think that because they're buying, the guy who sold it to them is a moron. Right? But a trader would never do that because it was never his idea. He made a market and somebody bought it, which is fine. The best day you could possibly have as a trader, if Matty Weber, I stick him out there and he goes, I'm 4 to 1/4, fine, buy 25. The next guy comes in, where are you? 285 calls. 4 to 1/4, fine, sell you 25. If that went on all day, Matty would be the happiest man on earth. He'd go home without a position and he'd make money. I will say that never happened, ever. Right? Maybe one day it might happen a little bit, but by and large, no. So, anyway, I do have the list here. There's an awful lot of stocks on this thing, Matty. And some of them I had no idea.
I want to understand is, you know, Robinhood is the sort of popular app of the day, but there's been many, right, that are quote-unquote commission-free apps. So, essentially, it's attracting retail traders to sign up, and they can start, you know, participating in the markets at for $1 or $5 or $50 or $100 or whatever amount of spare money that they might have that they want to, you know, go in the markets. And you can learn a lot and you can maybe make some money. You'll probably lose it, but it's a fun experience or an interesting experience or whatever. And that's why those apps are so attractive to, you know, college age people, people in their 20s, people in their, you know, younger people, or just novice people that want to get in the markets but don't know a lot about it and don't want to, you know, put a bunch of money up front. Obviously, Robinhood has to make money somehow. So, you know, we know on this show, because, you know, Chiefs explained it, that they're paid on payment for order flow. And I think people would be interested for you to explain what that means. But I would be interested in wondering who are the people that they're that get the option to, I guess, buy that data or to front run that information. How do they choose? Do those people bid on it, or how does that work? Do they have an agreement with a handful
of people? Yeah, well, that's a lot of the.
And before you answer that, remember the other part of Robinhood's profit model. They sell their data.
Well, right.
Right. And that's kind of what I mean, yeah.
Well, you sell the trade, is more important.
You sell the trade and you sell the data.
And they sell it to other people in the market so that, you know, that they're getting a lot of trend information. There's a lot of stuff about the small investor buyers. So whatever you think your advantage is by being young and small and nimble and all that is totally shot, because every bit of your behavior has been sold to the people who can really cash in on it.
Well, that's right. I mean, the story was the CBOE opened, and New York Stock Exchange was somewhat similar, but the idea was that you would pay a broker to have somebody go to the trading floor. Now, I know this is before Data Electronics, and you paid somebody to get you the best bid and offer, to get you the best price. That's what you paid a brokerage firm for doing. And those prices were pretty high, you know, when things started, and they came down to where they were pretty reasonable, but it was a very fair game. And then they said, wait a minute, the guy who changed it all was Bernie Madoff. He's the guy that instituted payment for order flow. And it's easy on the stock side, okay? So I'll explain it there, and then it goes to the option side. By the way, I'm looking at this list. This is today's Robinhood stuff. AAL, which I didn't even think was part of this, American Airlines, you can increase your position by 55 shares, Manny, or 50 option contracts. Now, first of all, are these guys morons or what? If you do a 50 option contract of an in-the-money call or put, that's 5,000 shares. Why can you do 5,000 shares equivalent in the option market and you only do 55 shares in the stock market? Are these guys morons or what? I don't get that at all. But here's a good one. At Nokia, you can only do 100 option contracts. I did 2,500 in there yesterday at Nokia. I don't think I want to clear through Robinhood. Just saying. But what Bernie Madoff did, because this will explain it very basically for people, because then now when you, there's no way I'm in 10 minutes on a show explain why there's 17 exchanges now and you preference going to different exchanges where maybe a preference for a person actually owns the exchange. So when you go there, all you're doing is preferencing. You're trading off somebody else's market. But I'll explain the Bernie Madoff thing, because he was a sleazebag long before everybody knew he was a sleazebag. He got the CBOE bought the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. Okay. It was in Cincinnati. They got a building. Well, of course, I don't know if they closed the building or what they did, but they were essentially a computer in the basement of the CBOE became the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. It was an electronic exchange back in, 1992, for God's sake. So Bernie, but if an exchange bought another exchange, they could only vote one seat. So Bernie owned like 7 or 8 seats. We actually had more power in the exchange than the CBOE that owned the place, which is an amazingly stupid regulatory rule. So Bernie decided, now the Midwest had something called a specialist takeout function. So a regular person could never just take the offer or hit the bid on the New York Stock Exchange. But if you were a specialist on another exchange, and there was a Pacific, there was a Midwest, there was the Philly, there was like 4 other stock exchanges, you could actually take that offer on the New York floor. So what Madoff said is, okay, wait a minute. If IBM is 160 to 160 and a quarter, I can guarantee people the New York bid and offer, but if they traded on the Midwest, I can actually make money on that. So I'm going to pay a penny a share to firms. Okay, so why now? How does that damage you? Well, at the time, something like 36.5% of all the trades that took place in the New York Stock Exchange took place between the bid and the offer. So if something was even to a quarter, 168 to 168 and a quarter, I'm using my floor talk, even to a quarter, 36% of the time when the brokers met, the customer would trade with the other customer at an eighth. And a specialist would be out of the trade. They'd say, I got $2,500 to buy, I got $2,500 to sell, let's do them at an eighth. So you would better the New York price. But Bernie says, wait a minute, I want that 36.5%. Okay, so I'll pay these firms a penny a share. And now, they never told you, so then who's the muttonhead, how's that for a term, who was the head of the SEC, he was, they kept saying, well, we'd like to stop this practice, but the horse is so far out of the barn, we're going to have to go down for disclosure. So if you got a account firm, it would say, but it never would say, oh, by the way, Matt Weber, you paid XYZ brokerage to trade this thing on the New York Stock Exchange, but it never really went there. It went to the Midwest, Instead of us paying a broker on the floor out there essentially fighting to get you a better offer or bid, we got paid a penny kickback for the thing. It never said that. It would, on behind the counter, it would say something like, you know, when the moon is in the seventh house from time to time, we made it go to a different exchange, New York Stock Exchange, and maybe there's some money changing hands, blah, blah, blah. They never once said, Matt, your order, which you think went to New York Stock Exchange, actually got filled in the Midwest with some sleazeball named Bernie Madoff. They never, so disclosure is in the eye of the beholder, right, Kevin?
Mm-hmm.
So Bernie started this whole thing. And the idea was that once in a while, somebody would buy 500 shares of IBM at a quarter, and the next person would sell it at even, and he'd make the $25 on the 100 shares, and all of a sudden he'd be happy as a clam. And he actually, in other words, he took the entire 36.5% of bettering the order flow, he took that out of your pocket. And the firms were willing to cough that up. So if you did an eighth better, 36% of the time, an eighth is 12.5 cents, that's what? 4 cents? 4.5? He basically took
it. I'm counting on you to do the math.
He basically did that on every transaction, and he got a penny on top of it. And you still paid full boat for the commission. How's that for a deal?
Yeah, great deal.
So then now this
always good work if you can get it. Hey, and I do need to elevate this conversation a little bit.
Please.
I want to go back to happy as a clam. Are clams really all that happy?
They are until they get shucked.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do they smile? How do you know? How do you know clams?
It looks like
happy?
When you wing them into the
there's some expressions that I love.
Oh yeah,
George Carlin did a bit on this once, but you know, they're selling like hotcakes. I had no idea that there was a big run on hotcakes.
God, who is this guy on here? That, oh man, I got some weirdo guy on here now. These people, when they start doing this stuff at home, let's just say what do they call it? Decorum for TV is getting a little worse. SP Futures down 18, NASDAQ Futures down 92.
You should see the basketball coaches.
Oh God, our buddy GameStop is up 143, trading 336. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sparks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Brett Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. I'm embarrassed to say it. I don't know what the hell half these stocks are. They're in Robinhood's list here. Anyway, Matty, you can only increase your position by 5 shares in GameStop, 25 shares in Cost. I don't know what Cost is. What's NAKD? Obviously, it's naked something. You do 750 in there, 110 in Nokia. Nokia is $4, and you can only buy 110 shares?
That's crazy.
It's kind of crazy. All right.
Naked Brand Group. Yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
I don't, these are the things that people are trading, I guess.
It's been around since 1947, though, whatever it is.
S&P futures down 23.50, NASDAQ futures down 110. Individual stocks in the Dow. The Dow's down 145.
So Naked, that's trading at $1.39 right now, you can only buy how many shares?
Let me get that other page.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know how.
Since when in America, if you have cash and you're ready to buy something, will they not take your cash?
Well, this is Robinhood. It's one place.
Well,
you can do whatever you want here, as long as you got the money.
That's true.
I mean, in the Dow, we've got Amgen down 3.25. We've got Boeing up 387. Not much really crazy stuff going on. Microsoft down 279. They were up yesterday on their earnings. Around the rest of the world, we've got, in Europe, we've got the DAX down 102.7%. FTSE down 67. It's 1% almost exactly. CAC around down 47, it's 0.9%. So, Nikkei, wow. Well, these guys have been up huge, but they've now down 534, 1.9%. Shanghai down 22.3%. Hang Seng down 267.9%. I don't usually give this one, but South Korea is down 3%, whatever that story is. But everybody in the Asia Pacific region is down this morning. It's a way of review of the stocks other than GameStop. Yesterday, the Dow was up 300. S&P futures up 36. But this is interesting. The S&Ps were down, futures were down like 136 on Wednesday. Yesterday, they were up 75.80. So let's say it was almost a Fibonacci replacement. It was a retracement, almost two-thirds. Then in the close, it dropped like 30 or 40 points instantly. They really only closed like up 26 on the day, the futures. Now they're down another 26. So we're really back down to where we were on Wednesday's close. NASDAQ was up 66 yesterday. Bonds, 1.07, it's up another basis point. So we're bouncing back up. We got down almost 1. Now we're heading back to the 110 where we were. I don't know if it's fast enough to save my bond position, but, no, it needs a little more. Japan is, whoa. Maddie, 0.05. It's been 0.04 for what, a year? 0.05. And the bond is minus 0.50, so interest rates are up across the board worldwide. Oil, up 26 cents, 52.60. Brent up 47 cents, 56. Natural gas, unchanged at 267. RBOB up 2 cents, 160 on the RBOB. And we've got gold up $25, 18.62. Silver, these guys, what have I said, Matty? Violently within a range, these guys are now up 6% today. 162, 27.55. Copper unchanged. What do you got for us, Trevi Weathersports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start. Coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson, all quiet. Southside Expressway is looking good. It's very quiet out there if you're heading into downtown. We do have a couple of crashes in the area. We have an issue up near Lake Bluff, North Shore suburbs. Route 41 at Buckley Road is blocked due to a stalled train. So crews are on the scene trying to get that fixed.
And I hate it when that happens.
That's never good. And then the only crash in the area is way down southwest, even west of Joliet, I-80 on the eastbound side. There is road construction that has significant delays. It's backed up everyone, apparently, down to one lane if you're coming eastbound on I-80 heading toward the south suburbs. just before Larkin Avenue, which is exit 130. Expect significant delays on I-80 due to that road construction that's still in place there. But everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be cold. We will see some sunshine, a high of 30. Right now, it is mostly clear and 23 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, more rain in the forecast today and a high of 65. Right now, it is partly cloudy and 54. In sports, quiet night last night. Bulls were off. Suns were in action. They blew out the Warriors 114-93. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. They'll welcome Columbus into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time puck drop. Coyotes were in action, though, and they beat the Ducks 3-2. Chief.
Here's this is right up your alley here, Matty. A lawsuit was filed against GameStop yesterday. Now, when you read these things, first of all, every user that uses Robinhood or virtually any other brokerage firm signs an agreement that says you can arbitrate stuff, not go to court. All right, so I don't know where this is headed. We'll see where this is going, because that's what Elizabeth Warren was going crazy on yesterday, is that how the individual people are hurt by arbitration. I got news for you. Maybe sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. I'm going to say the arbitrators favor individual investors quite a bit, but it's another story because I've been expert witness enough. Anyway, a Robinhood user filed a class action lawsuit. First of all, you can't file a class action. You can ask for somebody to make it a class, right, Kevin? There's no so you can't file a class action. Maybe that could be your intention. Following the app's decision to restrict GameStop trading on its platform. The lawsuit accuses Robinhood, a popular trading and individual brokerage app used by retail investors, of breaching its contract. First of all, the contract price says it can do whatever it wants. Of breaching its contract by failing to disclose it was going to randomly pull a profitable stock from its platform. What the hell does that mean? How do you guarantee that the next trade is going to be profitable? If you got a profit, sell it. You could always close, right, Manny?
Yeah, you could always close.
So, well, I'd also throw out the idea that there was nothing random about it.
Right. And it asked a federal court to immediately reinstate GameStop on Robinhood. Now, what if Robinhood doesn't have enough money? No, they went out last night and got another $1 billion. What if they didn't? You're going to force a place to be open when they don't have money to regulatorily open?
Well, before we went to break...
But if that's the issue, then they don't... You know, then they need to say that when they're stopping trading.
Yes,
on the
stock. I would agree.
They never said anything. Kevin's right. And for a while, the first hour of the open yesterday, you couldn't even find the stocks on the app, so you couldn't do anything. Right?
Oh,
you would search a stock and it just wasn't there. And then at about 9:30, 10 o'clock Chicago time, then you could find the app stock if you searched for it, but you could only close. You couldn't buy anything. So you could only sell shares that you had. So that's interesting. But before you started getting into the weeds on some of the Bernie Madoff stuff, you never really did answer the question. And maybe, I mean, I'm not saying you know the answer, but I think people really want to know, who is bidding on this data and who is bidding on the chance to front run all the order flow
from
Robinhood? How does that work? Do they have, I want to know who those people
are. There's like four big firms left. And the biggest one is Citadel. So most of the money, most of the order flow from...
A Chicago company.
Yeah, most of the order flow from Robinhood goes to Citadel. And they pay, from what I read yesterday, of course, is what you read, they pay an average of 58 cents a contract, which is a real lot.
And I'm willing to bet that they were one of the big shorts on GameStop and some of the others, and I almost guarantee you that they called Robinhood and said, "Hey, we basically own you. Shut it down."
Well, now you're getting in a confusing area there. The "we" part is somewhat of a spinoff of Citadel and whatever this Cohen's place. That's why they came up with the $2 billion. I mean, I wish I had my buddy who's still on the board of the SIBO. Of course, I don't know if he'd talk, but this outfit called Melvin Securities—they're a hedge fund. Those are the guys that were the big short in there. And they used to work.
And Steve Cohen, who owns the New York Mets, he oversees .72 Asset Management. That's his company, which is a $16 billion hedge fund.
Yeah, so somehow or another they're connected with this.
Didn't the Mets just have big financial problems because of investments with the Madoff thing?
Yeah.
This would be very Mets for Cohen to crash.
So somehow they...
right after buying them.
It's so true.
So, man, there is some connection between Citadel and whether they own part of Melvin or what they do, I don't know. I mean, but there is some connection there because allegedly, Griffin and Cohen came up with $2 billion, what, Wednesday morning or yesterday morning or something? And I think they blew through that like dinner through a goose. When the thing opened, I got another 100 higher. But getting the real details here are tough. That's why I'm hesitant to lap these numbers around. But there is a connection somehow between, because I've been reading this on Cranes, between Citadel and Cohen. Now, whether it was a branch off from those two firms or something, but there's some connection there. And Robinhood sends their order flow to Citadel. They get paid by Citadel. So, yeah, it's not an arm's length deal. But now, as to whether, but what you are continuing to say, and I'm trying to agree with you, but I don't know, is when they stop the trading, who's benefiting? I mean, the fact that the stock came back down, I don't think the sellers were able to increase their position either.
No, the stock came back down though because everyone panicked and saw this and started selling because that's all they could do. And then you're sitting there and let's say you built up, you know, 20 grand or 50 grand and some of those guys built up even more than that and you're seeing it go down to, you know, 35, 32, 30, 29 and you're like, God damn, I don't want to sell, but this could go down to zero. And so they started selling and that's why the stock went down because that's all they could do.
Well, they couldn't buy. And what you're saying is.
And that's why it's shooting back up today because everyone's saying that they're going to be able to buy again today.
Right. What you're saying is the person who was lucky enough to sell it at 300 and on the way down, he might have wanted to buy it back at 150 and he couldn't.
Well, yeah.
That too. I mean,
and or hundreds of thousands, if not millions of other people that wanted to participate in the market because they saw what was happening and then they couldn't.
Well, they couldn't buy today. But I mean.
Yesterday.
What I'm saying, what you're alluding to, and I'm hesitant to go all the way down this road with you, is to figure out the motivation of who exactly got hurt by the stop of trading. And I don't think we really know that, is what I'm saying.
Well, so hurt is not necessarily...
Do we know who got helped by the stop?
Yes, that's exactly right. You could argue no one necessarily got hurt, but you can clearly see who got helped. And then the people that got screwed were people that had to sell when they didn't want to sell.
Well, as I was trying to explain in a way, and this is very, you're taking me down another road here, is if people are, say, the Maddie Chief Kevin hedge fund is short 200,000 shares of GameStop, okay, and the thing starts to run up, we can either, now we're going to have a margin situation, right? Because obviously, it's the margin to hold the stock at 80 is a lot more than it was at 20 or 5, and at 200, it's another 2.5 times, right? So now we're getting gagged. Now we can either buy the stock back in, which is what obviously had to happen for the stuff to run up as much as it did, or if we get big brothers like Ken Griffin that gives us a couple of $1 billion, we might be able to ride it out. So what I'm hesitant to agree with you on this is. By the time the thing stopped, and it already traded 500 and 470, I don't know the position left of the short sellers. Are they, if they just
They were
got,
buying stock back in and they were helping shoot the stock price up.
Well, but I'm saying if they had already bought their stuff in and are just out bazillions of dollars, they don't have a dog left in the fight. If they actually got money from other people and it just kept matching the margin and the margin is now $90 billion, yes, do they want it to go back down? Absolutely. But I don't really know.
And you know that's exactly what happened.
But I don't know how much they had left, I guess is the question.
Well, yeah, I don't either. But you know that's exactly what happened.
I'm thinking they had some left.
Like, you've taught me this for years. You can always follow the money and you know exactly what happened. It's right. So clear. It's so plain to see that they were the only ones that would benefit from this going back down.
The only thing that's stopping me from totally agreeing with you is I don't have a number from Melvin that they bought in 100% of their stuff already, 50% or none. You know,
right?
I mean, that if they bought in 100% and they're just out, then they don't have a dog left in the fight, right? If they only bought back 20% and got the rest from Griffin and the other guy, then I think you're 100% right. But we don't know.
Yeah, and I know, and I'd like to hear Kevin's thoughts on this. But knowing, you know, the Reddit sort of forum and being very familiar with that over many years, Reddit's been around forever, and there's many different communities. I mean, there's sports forums where you can just BS with guys about sports. There's, you know, whatever. You're into hot chicks. You can talk about hot chicks, whatever you want.
Is this like the Yahoo groups?
Yeah, basically.
Of today?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And it's just a forum, and there's hundreds of different communities in it. And then, you know, guys just kind of BS about whatever their community is. Well, Wall Street Bets is just a community within Reddit. And basically, the spirit of the GameStop play was, you know, there's a big distribution of wealth problem in this country. And we all agree. I mean, the rich are richer than they've ever been, and there's the gap is bigger than it's ever been.
It's now, getting worse by the hour.
And it's getting worse by the hour, and, you know, there, everyone has different ideas on how to address that, but we all agree that it is there. And basically, they said, you know, a few of their leaders on this board said, hey, we recognize that a bunch of these billion-dollar hedge funds are, you know, short-selling these stocks. We can squeeze them if we all pull our resources together, and we can ideally take a bunch of money off of them and redistribute it literally across hundreds of thousands or millions of us, and this may be the only way we can do it. What do you say? And it started to gain momentum, and this was over the last couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden they started to see GameStop actually move, and then more and more people got in. And then yesterday, more and more people were going to continue to get in, and then they saw the reality of what the big guys can do to you, and they can just hammer it down and change the rules in the middle of the game and screw everybody. And that's the fury that's out there right now. Well, it was out there yesterday.
But everybody gets greedy. And if you decide to take a stock that's worth 20 or 10 or 5 and jam it up to 60 and get your little piece out of Melvin Securities, I'm all for it. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'd love it. But now, as I said on the show yesterday, I said at 470, it looks to me like the risk has turned on the longs and not the shorts.
Well, no question. At some point, it's going to hit a number where the risk is more on the longs.
Yeah.
The idea is that the longs are putting up $100 or $500 or $1,000, something that you can easily absorb. Maybe not as easily for some as others, but they're not putting up, you know, millions of dollars. They don't have millions of dollars.
Right.
So, you know, okay, so you bought fractions of a share with your $250 of spare money, and it goes down and you can't sell it until, you know, you lose half of it. So you lose $125. It's not the best thing to happen in the day, but it's not the end of the world. But the impact that you're having on the billion-dollar hedge funds that are losing, you know, millions, if not billions, that's the big picture.
Well, I mean,
So it's almost like entertainment money.
Yeah,
exactly.
But somebody somewhere.
But the people that did it early though turned it into life-changing money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you put in a couple $1,000 or whatever at, you know, $5 or $10, and then it went up to $500, if you were able to sell anywhere near the top, I mean, that's life-changing money.
But you would never, as much as everybody likes to hit me up lately, which is fine because this stuff is getting so complicated, it's hard to be the sage on all this stuff. You could never get me, Maddie, if I was part of that group, to, if I started it and I made some money, I would never tell you to buy it at 100 while I sold it to you and now went out and bought a new car, knowing that it's not, I would never do that. I think some people on Reddit are happy enough to do that.
Well, I think you're 100% right on that. And I also think that going back to your point from 20 minutes ago, a lot of them don't look at it as if I'm buying, someone else must be selling. They're just buying.
Yeah, well.
And they're not thinking about, well, who's selling it to me right now? But you're exactly right. Of course, you know, everyone's risk is different, and some people are going to say, hey, I already made a bunch of money. I'll sell to you. I don't care. And you know, that's the markets. But that's no different than anyone else buying and selling stocks.
Right, but every one of my clients, when I got up there going, this is not sustainable, how can I get in on the short side? And I go, wait a minute. You can't short this thing here. What do you got here? I mean, you're going to be right, but it might be $200 in your face before you're right.
Right.
I mean, so you got to be careful. I mean, like I said, I did some stuff. I don't think I ever worked as hard as I did yesterday. I had people calling me saying, "What can we do? What can we do?" We finally ended up doing something in AMC, and we did some stuff in Nokia. But I couldn't get the orders to JD fast enough. Where I'd say, okay, we'll buy the stock here, we'll buy the put here, we'll do something. And before I could even get off the phone to the guy, it had moved like $5. So I didn't even get an order in for like 2 hours because the thing was moving so fast I couldn't even pin it down enough to put an order in.
And AMC closed at what, 8:63 yesterday?
Yeah.
And in the pre-market it set, it looks like
12:35.
Yeah, 12. Okay. So
but here's
I wonder what that's going to be.
Well, here's why I picked AMC, and I'll be perfectly. The interesting part, there's something, oh God, there's something called a covered straddle right, and if you use different strikes, okay, it's called a covered strangle right. So when your volatility gets very, very high, I did this in 2007 with insurance companies, and it's all cash secured trade. I'll say what I did in 2007, it's a long time ago. The insurance companies, the Allstate and those places got down to like $5. And the calls and the puts were so expensive the $2 puts were like a dollar and a half, which is, you know, crazy. So I was able to buy the stock at five, sell the five calls, so I was covered, and sell the two and a half puts for more than $5. So I had enough money to buy, say, 1,000 shares of Allstate. You got to be careful. You only get this half the amount. I had enough money, say, in somebody's account to pay $5,000 for 1,000 shares of Allstate. But I didn't. I bought 500 shares. And I sold the seven calls and the two and a half puts for more than $5. So if I would have had to buy, had the stock put to me because of the put, I would be buying the other 500 shares at less than zero. That's how crazy the... And so these other things...
How do you buy something at less than zero?
I would have had to pay two and a half for it, but I'd gotten so much money for the call on the put, my net would have been less than zero.
Yeah.
So yesterday, I looked around. Every one of these things, as crazy as it looked like they sounded, if you tried to do that, as high as the volatility was, you could never get yourself to where you were buying a stock less than when the whole thing started, right? And the reason why I picked AMC, and again, this is, again, do not do this. The reason why I picked AMC is from what I read. When the stock shot up there the first day, AMC's been having trouble because nobody's going to movies, right? And evidently, from, again, what I read, which could be totally wrong, they had some treasury stock. They went out and sold their own stock at the inflated price and got money for the firm. So they're actually worth a little.
They seized the moment.
Yeah, they're actually worth a little. Now, I'm not an attorney on this, but you can't just issue stock and go sell it. But if you had bought it in, it becomes treasury stock. You can sell the treasury stock, I think.
Anytime you want, yeah.
Yeah. So these guys happen to have treasury stock. And if they waited another day, they'd get a lot more money. But they did pretty good anyway. So I thought out of these guys, even if I can't cover myself down to the original price, that I might, I probably can cover myself down to, well, today's worth. So they might have sold stock and are actually worth $2 more than when they started. So that's why I picked AMC. Now, you know, again, am I infallible on this stuff? No. I just, out of all the ones that were out there, this one made the most sense to me. And I had a bunch of people willing to go off the ledge on this. I go, no, let's find one that makes a little bit of sense here, for God's sake. So that's why I picked that. And I also got a spread on in
Nokia,
because for whatever reason, the volatility was really high, but somebody was beating the hell out of the February puts. And I mean, the February 19th puts and the... And that yet the February 12th puts were staying high. So I put a spread in and said, if somebody's going to beat up on these 19s, I'll pay like 4 cents for the spread. I'll buy the 19s, sell the 12s for 4 cents, which I think is worth, you know, worth, whatever that means, seven or eight. So I'm getting a buy on this thing. And, you know, it's only 4 cents, but it is 4 cents. And so what I'm saying is, if the thing hangs around here for another week or two, up, down, all over the place, if it lands in the same place, you know, that might be worth 20 cents. Plus, it's a, you know, I know just what I got in there. It's not selling stock short. It's not giving people margin calls. So those, out of all the mess yesterday, I ended up with two things after really 4 hours of solid looking at these five or six stocks and they're moving all over the place. You know, so, I mean, it's, but I, you know, whether they're going to win or not, but at least they make some sense. I have no idea where this GameStop's going. I mean, I couldn't put one of my people in. I had one of my guys call up and said, let's sell the 300 straddle. The thing's trading $180. And I go, what do you want to do that for? Well, come on, we got enough money. Let's just do it five times. Where do you think it opened the next day? 470. It already blew through the straddle in like 2 hours. I mean, I don't want to be chasing people down on that stuff. I mean, you know, Robinhood's got their own shtick going, but I think they ran out of dough. I think that's what happened there.
Yeah. Now, one other point about all this, because we actually discussed this on Wednesday, and this is yet another example of the inability, whether we should be able to in all cases or not, but the notion that we can control the technology we've created, that via technology we have created. In some ways, a monster in that, you know, what can happen now can happen at the speed of light, and any illusion or delusion that we have under control should have just been shattered again for the umpteenth time in the last few years, as we had, you know, Reddit users and app users just teaming up to just go ahead and blow away everybody.
Well, I don't really understand, Kevin.
And so this idea that we can control social media in any way is just preposterous.
Well, but you the social media is kind of a different animal. I don't know that.
That's what Reddit is.
Right, but the social media. When you say it's sort of like Yahoo groups, I remember. God, I looked at those things a couple times when they were out. I couldn't believe how many of those there were. I mean, there was a group. I remember seeing a group of manufacturing engineers that worked on railroad cars. There couldn't have been 40 guys in the country, but there was a group of the guys would talk about railroad cars in there. I mean, there had to be thousands of groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, is Reddit that big, or is Yahoo groups still around? I don't even know.
Reddit's bigger.
So there's thousands of groups. If you want to get in there and talk about guys that play center field and softball, there's going to be a group.
It's possible. I don't know.
Probably.
I mean, that's the way Yahoo was. I mean, right?
Probably. Yeah. And I would join the group of people who never in a million years would have played center field.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Not put me in coach. No,
I'm a corner infielder. What can I say?
But a catcher.
That aligns with my athletic ability.
But you're one of the few corner infielders that could catch, but you never made it to the mound.
Oh, hell no. I was such a bad pitcher that my team wouldn't let me pitch batting practice to them.
God.
they couldn't get a good pitch to hit from me then.
But I mean, the Robin Hood thing.
A good pitch to hit in the strike zone. That was the problem.
But you know what I'd like to have? I'd like to have somebody, maybe Carl knows. I don't understand. I don't get where the money is when you're doing zero commission and trading five shares. I don't know who you sell that to. I mean, there are people who will pay for it, but I mean, how much more of a how do they screw you on five shares enough to make money? I mean, when I'm sitting here, I'm looking at AMC now. It's $12.63. I mean, where do I get filled on my five shares? Even if they fill me at 13 and screw me for 30 cents, what does that come down to? $1.50 for five shares? I mean, I mean they're not going to screw you for 30 cents. I mean, how does anybody make any dough? For 5 cents, or are they selling you other stuff on there? I mean, I've never been on their site.
Well, you can make a lot of money selling information,
I guess.
It wouldn't just be a Robinhood or anybody like that. There are all kinds of websites that have a stated purpose when their real business model is accumulating and selling data. You know, you can go on to websites with information about parenting advice. Well, what they're really doing is they're accumulating data about people who are parents and things that concern them, and then they sell it, and people use it for product development. They use it to advertise products, all those kinds of things. You think you're going and getting, good tips about potty training or something like that.
Kevin, I think you need to have a class in writing headlines. Here's another one. If we just went through the law, J&J, Johnson & Johnson, says it's one-shot COVID vaccine is 72% effective in the U.S., which isn't as good as the other guys, but less potent in other regions. What does that even mean?
Good question.
If I get it in Mexico, it doesn't work?
Kev,
take care of yourself. S&P futures now down 45. That's not good. NASDAQ futures down 150. Be right back, Mr. Carl Verdeninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Something happened. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger in his car, but we'll deal with that. He usually has a pretty good phone. S&P Futures down 38. They were just down 45, so we're heading south here. NASDAQ Futures, and we had a huge sell-off over in Asia, 3% in South Korea. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So how many thousand shares of what GameStop do you have? That you're now up $100 this morning.
No, I was not playing in that little casino, but I'll tell you what, I want to know who's going to prison.
I talked to a dude yesterday who's an attorney, and he's been on boards and does a lot of arbitration stuff, and he thinks you sort of got to start to where how that many shares were shorted in the first place.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. As a broker, your job is to match buyers and sellers. You don't care at what price the transaction takes place because that's not how you make money. You're not directional. Same thing if you're a market maker. The last thing you ever want to be is directional. You don't take directional bets. So once the brokerage set the margins to 100%, which they all did immediately as soon as this thing started, what possible legal justification do you have for locking buy orders in a security?
The only justification legally is that when you sign a brokerage agreement, the broker can, the clearing firm, not the broker, can pretty much do whatever they want. And I think what happened, Kyle, and I could be wrong, but I think what happened is they got caught up. The thing was so busy, they got caught up not being able to match up the money between the T+1 option settlement and the T+2 stock. And I think they ran out of dough because they went out and raised $1 billion last night.
Yeah, I saw that, but you know, I wonder whether or not, because the thing is this: if I buy the security and there's no margin allowed on it, then I had to have the cash in my account before I did it.
Well, some places allow you to send it in. I don't think they're going to let you allow to send it in on this. I mean, if you've been a customer in good standing at PTI and you've got 100 grand in your account and you say, buy me 120 grand worth of IBM, we're going to do it, and you can send the check in 2 days.
Yeah, but you're not, I mean, that's not what's going on.
No.
Like Robinhood. Okay.
Well, do you think, I actually don't know, it's maybe more of a Matty Weber question, do you think that the people who trade through Robinhood have enough money in their account to where that always when they make a trade, the money's in there.
You can't make a trade on Robinhood without the money in your account unless you... I think they do have some sort of borrowing feature.
Yeah, they'll margin like anybody else, probably.
Yeah, but typically, I would say 9 times out of 10, the people that were trading Robinhood, the millennial and Generation Z, whatever the hell they're called, they're trading with the $500 they put in the account.
Okay, now what? How many people do you think, Carl, at all the different firms have essentially negative equity in their accounts, and that the brokerage firms have trouble collecting? It's got to be happening all over the place.
Well, you know what? If you're under margin limits and you're not allowed to margin on a stock anyway, then how do you get negative equity?
No, I'm talking about earlier in the week. I mean, when this started, I think these guys were probably regular margin.
But you know what ends up happening? Because I've had this happen to me before. I've been short something, and it gets squeezed. And all of a sudden, the margin goes to 200% of the position.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
And thank God I had the cash, because otherwise, you know what, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, because they always retain the right to do that. And when this thing started going crazy, it was, 200, 300%. But yesterday, about 11 o'clock or so, it actually flipped over to easy to borrow. It was borrowable at TD.
Right. Yeah, it was borrowed at RBC, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was able to borrow. I could have borrowed it at half a dozen different places. I've got accounts all over the place. It had been hard to borrow for quite a long time. But here's my problem with this, we had a liquidity squeeze problem. If you've got everybody trading on a cash basis, and they're under the regulatory limits for day trading anyway, all right, so they're under 25 in equity, then they've got the three trade lockout too.
Right.
Until they settle. So, I'm not buying this explanation, because Robinhood's whole thing is that they're doing this for the little guy. All right. They're not carrying around people that have $500,000 in their accounts. So I want to know what the real story is. And then you've got there are claims of interference. There's a supposed whistleblower that says the White House called them and told them to shut it down.
That wouldn't surprise me.
That's been flying around on social media. And I don't know if it's true or not, but supposedly this is from people who actually work there. And then there's another one that says there's a very well-known hedge fund that was basically making a stink because they were getting buried by it and was going around trying to get this done, too. My question is, since there apparently was a very large illegal short presence in that somebody was abusing the market maker exemption but wasn't really a market maker, which is how you end up with more than 100% of float out. Right,
right. Right.
Who was that, and why is it that we seem to have this guild of hedge funds? Because normally the corrective action for that is, if I'm a hedge fund and I do both long and short, and I figure out that somebody's doing that sort of thing, I'm going to ram a telephone pole up their backside.
I actually know an individual and a couple of people at his firm that were banned for life, hopefully get back in, for having a specialist operation and doing stuff to try and stay short in some stock. And how is it that these other guys get to do it? There is some level here at which, I mean, I have no idea the culpability, if any, of Citadel, but I do know that if all of a sudden they weren't there tomorrow, the way the SEC and FINRA and the rest of the people in Washington have set the markets up, there wouldn't be any markets, Carl. Instead of having the 1,000 traders that if two guys go out, somebody walks over their spot and takes their place, we've decided that there's only two or three firms that make all the markets, or four or five, which is insanity to me. It's been insanity forever. So yesterday, if there was any, I don't think Citadel's involved in the short part themselves. This Melvin was what a... They're somehow affiliated with Citadel. I don't want to say a spinoff, but the idea that if push comes to shove, that some of the regulators would lean in on the side of Citadel and whoever else being in business versus the people that are trading through Robinhood. I'll take that trade anytime, right? The idea that that certain people are favored all the time, and yet when something bad happens, then we got to save them. I mean, you become too big to fail in this industry. Why? Nobody cared if one of the market makers in IBM got carried out. There were four other guys taking the test the next day, right?
Yeah, well, and the thing is, though, is that, there's a market maker exemption for not having to locate before you're short, and it's there for very good reason, because if you're an options market maker, and I want to come in and I want to buy calls, well, guess what? That's synthetic, so that means you take the other side, you're now short the stock.
Well, okay? the trick is...
Guess what? You don't want a directional bet on the position if you're a market maker. That's not your job.
Right, but
you're going to try to... your job is to hedge that thing off. So I get it that... the thing is, since I don't want to be directional as a market maker, that doesn't persist. That's there until I can get that hedge on, and then it's gone. So it's there for, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever long it takes. But it's not there for months and months and months, and this short in excess of the float. And by the way, the float's not the whole story either, because shares that are not borrowable, which is the case if you've got them in a cash account,
right,
a lot of retirement accounts, a lot of 401ks, they're not marginable. To actually have even 100% of the float short is not possible.
Well, you can, when you open up an account at PTI through RBC, which I'm more familiar with their paperwork than IB, I'm sure IB is somewhat the same. So if Carl walks in and he plunks down his $1 million, which I'm assuming is Carl's minimum account, so he throws us a bone, sends us $1 million, and in there it's going to say, if you open up a margin account, that we reserve the right, not we, but RBC reserves the right to lend your stock out. Now you can, you can check a box there that says, I don't want you lending my stock out, and I'm sure some people do because they don't understand it. So what you're saying, Carl, very eloquently, by the way, is that if the float is 100 billion shares, not the whole float is eligible to be borrowed. So if the short interest is 130 billion shares, it's actually more than 30% because a lot of it's not borrowable.
That's right, and some of that's not borrowable because the customer doesn't want it to be, but some of it's also not borrowable because regulatorily it can't be.
If you have a margin agreement, it can be borrowed. I think you can borrow stock out of an IRA if you have a margin agreement.
There's a lot of those accounts are not marginable, period.
Okay, I'm sure know this. We do option trades for people in their IRAs, which in order to do an option trade, you need a margin account, but it's not a margin transaction. You're not borrowing. So but
it depends on the account, because there are some that are open that are pure cash.
Right. Oh yeah. But most firms will not let you have a margin agreement in an IRA. We do. Okay. Because for instance, if you were to buy, if you had a stock, say it's trading $100 and you think it's going to go from 100 to 110, you can buy the 100 calls, sell the 110 calls, and for say $3 or whatever the price happens to be, and pay the $3. That's not a margin transaction. There's no borrowing. But the convention is it goes into a margin account because it's a spread transaction even though you paid for it. So I'm guessing that person, when he files, I could ask my brother, but I think that person probably, if he doesn't check the box, could have his stock loaned out. I think, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, generally speaking, yes. But the thing is that's not the case for an awful lot of people.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, like I said, what's out there allegedly is the float is not all float.
You know, Carl, while we're on the subject real quick, I'm going to be real brief on this. Everybody, and I'm going to say, I won't give you the chance to mess this up, everybody will say that you can't borrow money in an IRA, right? You can't have a margin transaction? Correct?
But there are probably ways to do it.
Because it's categorically not true. Now, the reason why people say that is it would make such an amazing amount of work for clearing firms like RBC or whatever in theory, if you had an IRA account, I mean, we won't do it here, but you could conceivably, if it's $1 million in your IRA, and you went out and borrowed $500,000, and you made $3 million, you have to pay tax on the part that you borrowed. So,
right.
So you'd have to actually pay taxes on $1 million that came from the borrowed piece of the money. But nobody wants to do that paperwork. So they just tell people you can't borrow. But in fact, you could. We won't do it for you. Nobody will. But you could.
Yeah, but nobody does.
No. Nobody does. Right. All right. So hey, right. How is it that we, the Elizabeth Warrens of the world, we regulatory people screwed up, so we need more regulation? The non-follow there to me is bizarro world. I mean, why are they always behind these people? Oh, what I want to say is, what happens to the people, they just ignore, even if there's buy-in stuff, Carl, they just ignore it. And at the end of the day, one of the transactions used to be is they'll get somebody, they'll buy puts and they'll buy stock. They'll buy deep in the money puts and they'll buy stock. And just exercise the next day. So if you have to buy in your stuff on a Tuesday, you're back in the same position on Wednesday. And they actually kicked a few people out of the business for doing the other sides of the trade, but all the big specialists that were doing initiated, they're all still here.
Yeah. What I'd like to understand is, you know, we all have this so-called outrage on Capitol Hill. Well, how come Pelosi and her little clan are keeping the money on calls just before regulatory changes were made to the fossil fuel industry? Excuse me?
Yeah. Well, this whole concept, I mean, I don't know when this all changed, Carl. I mean, I'm not one of these guys where, you know, maybe he'll play the Andy and Mayberry song on me. But, I mean, I don't remember, and I could be a blithering idiot on this, but Illinois has had, you would never guess, it's had a long string of really good senators. You know, maybe until recently, I don't know, but like the people are there now. I don't remember any one of those people coming back rich. I mean, Paul Simon didn't. Chuck Percy already had money, so he didn't need it. I don't think Everett Dirksen did. I think Paul Douglas came back and went back and was teaching at the University of Chicago. Even Peter Fitzgerald didn't make a fortune when he was there. Why all of a sudden now, seemingly like the people like we talked about maybe last week, somewhere there's this break in the action where I really think a lot of good people go to the House of Representatives. I mean, you had a friend that went there. Somewhere between the 2, 3, 4 terms, the people that stick it out somehow make enough inroads into people that give them money, like on a daily basis, that it's worth it for them to stay and prosper, and the other people turn around and leave. Because there's more turnover in the House now, I think, than there ever has been. And we're you know, pretty close. And yet the people who seem to make it to the point where they're I'll say, bought and paid for, or seem to be able to, the largesse, I mean, the rookie guy coming in there, or girl, does not make money like Nancy Pelosi's husband does. I mean, somehow or another, or Phil Graham's wife did. I mean, there's like a fork in the road here where, or a stream that some people get over and some people don't. And I really can't get my arms around it at all. But am I wrong here? That somewhere along the line, people benefit by this. There's people in there now that don't think about trading when they know stuff. I don't think Paul Simon or Everett Dirksen would ever have done that, or Adlai Stevenson. Yet these guys, it's part of the game now. How did that become part of the game?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what committees you manage to yank. I mean, that's, you know, because that's where the real inside knowledge comes from. Once something gets onto the floor, it's one thing, but if you're involved in the markup,
well,
because here's the thing, Keith, is that when you think about this, where does all this bread get buttered, all right? It's the three lines that get stuck into the middle of a bill somewhere, right?
Yep. My attorney buddies, when we first got out of school, one of the guys sat me down and he was saying about how the last thing you want to do is to be a 28-year-old, 30-year-old congressman, because you have two houses, you're making $30,000 a year. You had to put all your stock in escrow, and you can't touch it, you can't trade it, you can't do anything. Was that just convention, or was that a rule, or did the rule get changed? Now, I mean, I would say the fork in the road was, that I heard of, was Cheney. because he had all his money in Kellogg, Brown, and Root, and he traded the hell out of it while he was in there, I think. I mean, now, did he just say, this is a convention, I don't buy the convention, screw you guys? Or was it a law, or was it a gentleman's agreement that all of a sudden nobody pays any attention to? I mean, what is it?
Well, in theory, there is a ethics code that prohibits you from doing that sort of thing, but, yeah, okay, pull the other one, right? I mean, I don't know when that actually turned into, like, a joke, because it used to be, years and years ago, that you either got expelled or potentially, if you were a judge or something like that, you got impeached.
Well, the lady from, her husband's the head of the what? The ICE? She walked out of a COVID meeting and sold stock. Nobody batted an eyelash. And this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, it used to, you know, the rule used to. Well, look at how much noise people made about Trump when he went into office about his assets actually not really being in a blind trust.
Right.
Okay, and yet, you know, think about this. Why is it that we have Congress people who their assets and all of their family's assets are not forced into a blind trust?
Well, right. I mean, I'm almost to the point where, and Maddie thinks I'm nuts on this, but I'm almost ready to give up with this Janet Yellen appointment. How can you possibly get money from everybody you're ever going to regulate and everybody you regulated in the past, especially when there were shadows on your tenure of information leaking out of your place and people trading on it? How do you appoint that person back in there again? Every single ethic that I've ever been taught in my entire life that goes against it, and yet there she is, and she's confirmed by everybody. I mean, am I that old?
I was blown away by some of the things that I found, and I had to do a little digging around. It looks like about $8 million, with a huge part of it coming from Citadel.
Well, that's the other question. It seemed like her going rate was 50 to 60. And yet Citadel ponied up, what, 221? Who's the guys who bought Household Finance? HBC? It was either HBC or UBS. They ponied up 2.25. And so how do you, even if you have a going rate, what do you get for paying me 5 times the going rate? What benefits? Now, my question, Carl, is this in response for what she didn't do when she was the regulator at the Fed, or what she's liable to not do now as a Treasury? Is it payback for before or the future?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the problem, right? Is that, I mean, it's, you know, it's the old, and then you've got the other revolving door deal, which is, well, you know, you get the book deal, right? Well, who funds that on those advances?
I had a teacher at Notre Dame, and it was in a, we had to do with monopolies and all kinds of stuff. I don't know what exactly the name of the course was. Father Fitzgerald, and the guy was, of course, you know, he was a priest. He had, as Mike Tyson said, he had 3 hats and a cot, right, every day. So, but he would say, he would go out on a mediation. He was a mediator and an arbitrator. And, you know, very well thought of, because, I mean, the guy was really bright. He was like 80-something. He died when he was like 107. Anyway, somebody asked him, well, what happens when you go into one of these towns and stay away from, both sides? And he goes, I make my own travel arrangements. I stay at a motel outside of town that they would never think I'm staying in, like, you know, like the Red Roof Inn or someplace. Is if I go out for a hamburger and somebody, a beer shows up at my seat and they say, the man over there bought you a beer. I walk right over to the phone, back before they had cell phones. I call and I say, I've been compromised. I'm off the case. Where do you think that morality lands now? Nowhere?
Oh, yeah, forget it. Nobody knows that.
What do you think of, they just came out with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine here. Did you read did I send you the thing from The Guardian where they're tracking, all the individual antibodies for people that had it? They're tracking the Pfizer and they're tracking the, AstraZeneca. And that after 20 weeks, everybody's all good. The leading was the individual antibodies in the Pfizer. And the AstraZeneca was not as good. But now this Johnson & Johnson doesn't look like it's quite as good either, although it's only one shot, right? So that it's got that going for it. So it looks, you know, it's not like 20 weeks is the deadline. That's just as far as they've gotten. But it basically says that people's own antibodies are as good as the vaccines, you know, with most people. And, but the vaccines are working pretty good too. And that the, even people that get it, there's been evidently in the Johnson & Johnson group, there have been no deaths. So I guess we're making some progress, Carl.
Yeah, I think to some degree. I mean, my biggest problem with the new technology stuff is that, historically speaking, a vaccine is either used a attenuated or a killed virus. And so your body's reaction physiologically is essentially identical to getting infected. These newer technology things are targeting only this spike protein, this one piece of the virus. And I have some very grave concerns about that because it's never been done before. And while you think that would be okay, the mother and father of all blank-ups has come out of those assumptions in the past when you think, well, yeah, that you know, there's no problem with that. And I'm especially concerned with some of the data that I'm seeing, and it's anecdotal at this point. I can't put hard numbers on it, of people who had COVID and got one of these newfangled vaccines and then got hammered immediately after, including a few that have died. So I don't know what's going on there yet. And, you know, the problem is that until you get enough data, you can't say it's positive, right? Because a lot of the people that are getting these shots are people that are old and sick to begin with. So, I mean, yeah, they fall over dead every day from all sorts of reasons. But I don't like that kind of a correlation factor because it is wildly higher than what you see from flu shots in the CDC's database. And, of course, older and sicker people tend to get the flu shot as well.
Well, I have the antibodies, so I feel that I have no reason to take this vaccine until the antibodies are wearing off. I'm saying September. Why would I want it before then?
Well, I don't think you even want it then, and the reason is this. Back in March and April, they were trying to find out if people that had SARS had immunity to COVID. And they didn't know, so they ran some tests, and they found that not only did SARS infection, prior SARS infection, give you a decent degree of immunity, but in addition, about half the population had a level of immunity they couldn't explain. It was obviously from some other viral infection, but they didn't know, you know, what it came from because there was no antibody present to either SARS or COVID, and yet their blood knew what it was. Their T cells knew what COVID was and attacked it and got rid of it.
Well, there's a couple of COVID colds, right? Let's save this for after the break, Carl. There's a couple of COVID colds, right?
Yeah. Well, coronavirus is 4.
Okay, S&P futures is down 27. We come back a little bit. We were at 20, and then we were at 45. Now we're back a little bit. NASDAQ futures down 110. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments.
You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us. Johnson & Johnson also said the vaccine is less effective against some of the new COVID variants. Johnson & Johnson, whack, whack, down 6.25, trade 162. It's been up this week, but still it's down on this news from this particular vaccine. Anyway, S&P futures down 23 now. They've been down as much as 42. NASDAQ futures, which is down over 100, is now down 82. Dow futures are down 250. So a lot of that's, some of that's Johnson & Johnson. So it's very hard to even, this stuff is moving during the commercials, for God's sake. DAX down 179, 1.3%. FTSE, all I've seen is red, man. It's just red. FTSE down 115, 1.8%. CAC around down 84, 1.5. Over in Asia, we also got a 3% drop in South Korea, which we don't normally talk about, but Nikkei down 534, that's 1.9%. Shanghai's hanging in there halfway decently, around 22.6%. Hang Seng down 267.9. Bonds, we're having a rally in the bonds here. 10-year is now back to 1.09. Is 0.50, so that's down a few base points. And even the Japan actually moved. It's up to 0.05. It hasn't moved in ages. Oil up 30 cents, 52.64. Brent up 52 cents, 56.05. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB up 4 cents, 162. Maddie, no more 230 gasoline, I don't think, even in the burbs. Gold up 30 bucks now, 18.68. Silver up 156, that's 6%. Copper up 1%. It's 3.15, or 1 cent, 1 cent, 3.59. Inflation, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, Chief, if you're coming inbound into downtown this morning. Absolutely no delays to speak of on any of the area expressways, and we actually have some sunshine for the first time in a while, though it is cold out there, but it should be a nice driving.
It looks nice.
Yeah, if you're heading in, it'll look nice out your window as you have the heat blasting. But no delays on the expressways. A couple of issues off the expressways, though. Western suburbs, Route 83 at Brookwood Street, there is a crash. And then southwestern suburbs, Lamont Road at Woodcrest Drive, there is an accident as well. And then the big delays this morning, as we talked about last hour, some emergency road work that has the right lane closed on I-80 eastbound, just before Larkin Avenue. That's exit 130, just west of Joliet. All kinds of congestion and stop-and-go traffic as construction crews are trying to get whatever road work they're doing on I-80, probably a huge pothole causing us a slowdown there for the better part of the morning. So that's our big concern. Everything else quiet out there. Weather today, sunshine all day, cold temperatures, a high of 30 with wind chills in the low 20s.
Right now it is sunny and 24 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today with a high of 65. Right now it's mostly clear and 55. In sports, Bulls were off last night. Suns blew out the Warriors 114-93. In hockey, the Coyotes were off as well. They're back in action tonight. They'll host Columbus at the United Center. That's a 7 p.m. puck drop. Coyotes beat the Ducks yesterday 3-2. Chief.
You know, we have a, not a client, but a listener from that area and says you've been very remiss by not saying how much rain they've gotten out there. Evidently, they've had huge amounts of rain.
Yeah, the Southwest has been hit hard with storms.
We got you, Carl.
Can you hear us?
Yep.
Okay,
I'm
good. Yeah, apparently the Southwest has had tons of rain, even like Southern California, where it never rains.
It's a song, isn't it?
I've heard it.
Yes. they're getting a massive amount of rain, and they're getting snow in the feet in the Sierra Nevadas, aren't they, Carl? I mean, it's serious stuff. I mean, if you're skiing, it's head high. So anyway, I'm sure they got avalanche stuffs going. So Carl, one of Audrey, my significant other, one of her friends is in she owns a very successful, I'm going to say, flower place, and the COVID has done nothing but bury her. And she says basically, the hell with it, I'm going down to Mexico and open up a bed and breakfast. So. Are we, now I look.
That doesn't sound that bad, to be honest.
No, it doesn't sound that bad. But now I'm ready to get a little spot on the fishing village that my grandmother came for in Italy. The idea that we have a treasury secretary that just got paid off by everybody she's supposed to regulate, and we guy who's the head of the Fed who says there's been no inflation for 20 years, and I can sit there and go, let's see, hospitalization, homes, education, I can name them. They're up like three times. Housing's only up double. How the hell do we go forward with people like this in office, Carl?
Well, you know, it's not just there. I mean, you take a look at all of the stuff that we have done over the last 9-10 months with this COVID stuff, okay, with the virus. And now we actually have real data from places that both did things and places that didn't do anything. And specifically, we have South Dakota that, you know, told the government basically to go stick it in terms of any kind of mandate at all. And their epidemic curve looked exactly like everybody else's. So we now have proof that all of this stuff that we did, all it did was screw people. And it made certain people rich.
Yep.
Okay, so we reallocated assets, if you will. I mean, you know, look at how great Jeff Bezos thinks this thing is, right, with Amazon. Whereas you're the florist, not so much. And then on top of that, we're putting jabs in arms. But statistically, nobody from those jabs in arms has an antibody response yet, because it just takes that long. You know, you got to get the two shots, and then it takes about 3 weeks.
Well,
and yet, when you look at the curve of infections in essentially every state of the union, it's collapsing.
Right.
And it was collapsing in December. So that was not from vaccines. That's just because, hey, the thing's running out of people to infect. We did this once before in the 1970s. 1976, I think, was the year. We were all freaked out about a swine flu there was a soldier that got it at Fort Dix, and that was in the spring of the previous year. Oh my gosh, everybody's going to die. It's going to be 1918 all over again. We jabbed all sorts of people. The swine flu never showed up the next year, but a whole bunch of people had bad side effects from the vaccine, including Guillain-Barré. It wasn't a huge number. It was like 600 or 700 people that ended up paralyzed as a result. Which, you know, out of however many people they jammed, it wasn't much. But the thing was, they knew in October that this virus was not going to actually circulate, and they jabbed everybody anyway.
Right. Oh yeah.
An epidemic curve that is collapsing all over the United States, and yet, has anybody stepped back and said, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing here? This thing's over, it's going to be endemic, it is going to circulate in the population, but if you had it, the odds are, yeah, you'll eventually get it again, but you won't get it bad because you still have some immunity to it. If you didn't have it, you'll get it, but there isn't enough community susceptibility left for you to pass it on to 50,000 people and cause another blow-up. So this is going to be like a cold or a flu virus that goes around, everybody, you know, people get it from time to time, and every now and then somebody gets it bad. But from a standpoint of the public health reality, it's over. And then here's the real 900-pound gorilla in the room. When do you want to take an excess load in your healthcare system regarding respiratory viruses? What time of the year do you want that to happen?
Well, if you could, it'd be the summer.
Well, yeah, so why did we lock everything down and mask everybody and everything else in the, you know, in April and May?
I don't know. It's kind of curious. I mean, it comes down to the mentality. You know, Carl, the reason why I love doing the show is because I can match things up. This GameStop is very similar to what you're talking about in the COVID. For some reason now, people demand, or people in office think they demand, that no matter what happens, you know, that somehow or another, government has to, quote, try and fix it or somehow get involved, and they feel that they can fix stuff. I think over a period of time, actually, the treatment's gotten way better on this COVID. I mean, I had it a couple of months ago. I'm really happy I didn't get it probably in April. I actually think that some of the new strains, because my doctor mentioned this to me, are more contagious and they're probably a little less virulent than the ones that, because a lot of people were dying April and May, but they didn't have any idea how to treat it, and they were screwing people in the ventilators. But what I'm saying, Carl, is there's this, I had an article from one of my Notre Dame buddies way back in April, and he's a doctor. The article was by this doctor. And he said this couple came in, and they're in their 60s or 70s. They had grandkids. And they said to him, am I better off getting it today and either basically croaking or getting over it, or should I basically lock myself up for a year, worry about it, not see my grandkids, not do anything, and then get it in November or December, which is essentially what has happened, right? I mean, it was...
Well, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, the thing is, here's the really nasty number. Our local, down here where I live, we have one hospital in the county for all intents and purposes, all right? So there's one big medical center. If you get in serious trouble, that's where you end up. And they were running about a 30% fatality rate with this thing all the way through. Now it's 60 from the start of the infection. They're actually having days now where they report one hospitalization and three deaths.
How you doing that?
So did we lose the knowledge that we had gained over the last 9 months about how to treat this thing? Because it sure looks like it in our area.
Well, there's a hospital here in Chicago. I think, man, you heard a commercial. I think it's Arlington Heights or somebody. They claim they've treated, correct me if I'm wrong, Maddie, please. I thought they said they treated their 2,000th COVID case, and they don't have a death yet.
Well, yeah, you know what? But these guys, they have like 218 or 220 admissions and like 130 dead.
Wow. Well, they must be getting people pretty bad shape. I mean,
that's part of the other problem is we're sending people home to eat chicken soup until they're choking to death.
Well, I mean, the idea, though, I don't buy totally. I think that this has been a really pretty bad disease for a lot of people. And I know a couple of people that have died, and I really like them. And they were, you know, in their 40s. They had diabetes. They weren't heavy. It was type 1. It was the one where it's in your genes. And I'm sorry those guys are gone. I mean, I don't know if they'd be gone with the regular cold or flu. I don't think so. This attacks a lot of people. It's not fun. I mean, at all. But I think the response, a lot of it is pressure from people for government to do something. That's where the pressure's coming. Right now, I mean, if all of a sudden, you know, if it rained too hard, there'd be people saying the government should do something. What are we going to do? Seed the clouds? I mean, this idea, even with the GameStop, the market will figure this out. If you find out why these people got so They got so much short. If there's a wrong someplace, you need to investigate it and write it and spank some people. There's no doubt about that. But it may just be that there's a short squeeze and this thing went up and it's back down. I mean, and the people who got in when they shouldn't have got in early were lucky, made money. God love them. The people who lost money, I would hope that Biden and the rest of these people would have the smarts to say, well, let's raise the deduction from $3,000 that somebody can take off their income if they just lost $100,000 and they're 25 years old. Hope there aren't any of those. I mean, the stuff we could be doing, we're not doing. Right? I mean, I don't understand how are we going to go forward with either the cast of characters that Trump had around him or these guys? And I know I got to give them a chance. It's not like we've replaced Local 12 with Saints. They're the same people. They're just taking money. I don't get it. I mean, is it possible for us to get some people? I don't care what side of the aisle you are, but do something. I don't care what your political, your leanings are, how you put together an agrarian, an agriculture plan, or how you put together a communications plan. It shouldn't really make any difference, should it? It should just be a good plan.
Well, you'd think, but, you know, it seems as though all we do is have retreads and the conflicts of interest are crazy, and then we say, oh, you know, that's not a big deal. Well, you know, I seem to remember that we played that game, what was it, about 12, 13 years ago, and we know how it ended, too.
But, I mean, I would feel perfectly confident. I don't know what the injuries would be like, but I would be perfectly confident putting you and Frank in charge of building 20 houses. You guys might not agree with anything on politics, but I know I'd come out with some pretty darn good houses. I mean, it shouldn't matter really. When you have a job to do, right? My stepfather said when he was in the Army, and he took this kind of his whole life. He was the world's grumpiest Irish guy, but you know that just was him. But he said, I learned in the Army that you had to get along with people to get a job done that you didn't like and you didn't agree with, but for purposes of getting the job done, you got it done. And if you would have gone through he was a controller at Simon Eyes and in Texas. If you'd have gone through his accounting department in 1964, you wouldn't have believed the black people, the Indians. He goes, I don't care what they look like. If they do a good job, what difference does it make to me? And he goes, everybody in here does a good job. They don't all get along, but they don't argue at work. They go home, but while they're here, they work their ass off, and they're good people. I mean, and why can't we just take that sort of... I mean, you're here to do a job in Congress. Stop fighting. Stop getting on TV. Let's fix some stuff. I mean, yet we're not there, Carl. We're not there at all, I don't think.
Oh, I know. I mean, when I ran MCS in Chicago, it was the same way. I was like, I don't care what you look like. I don't care what color your skin is. I don't care if you're fat, you know, fat, skinny, short, tall. You're Martian. I could care less. You do the job. Do you work? Do you show up? Do you make an effort to try to, you know, improve on whatever it is that, you know, was there yesterday? Hey, it's all good.
But we, as much as we are bitching and moaning about the new, you know, racism and the other stuff, we still don't seem to just treat people correctly. Right? All we do is talk about it. We talk about everything. And we don't have any doers. We were talking about vaccines forever, and you and I and Maddie could have got a little van. We could have done 15 nursing homes in the last 6 days. By not talking
and here's the thing. We knew that this anti-parasitic drug that's been around for 35 years, okay, ivermectin, we knew that that was a decent prophylaxis, that it stopped you from getting it, and if you got it, probably helped you from getting hammered by it. We've known about that since June. Why didn't we hand that out to the people in the nursing homes until we could get around to them with vaccines?
I agree. Hey, let's talk. We're back only. We're only down 11 here. Have you ever seen anything like? And I've been doing this, and I love it because for 40 plus years now, I have never seen a day like Wednesday when the market was absolutely getting hammered, like 3% and 4%, and all we talked about was four stocks that were up. We've never even almost hit the news. Are we starting to get a little bit of a turn here on this inflation and? With the Fed's policy, I mean, if Powell sounded hollow the other day, anybody who thinks he's going to make it for the foreseeable future of not having to cut back on his buying assets and stuff, I think you're smoking the wrong pipe. I mean, I don't see that happening. I mean, this constant printing money here, everybody's noticing it, except him. It appears. I mean, are we in the eighth inning of this? I'm not going to say do anything with your trading tomorrow or the next day, but it's starting to look a little long in the tooth. Whatever it is, put more money in, market goes up, blah blah blah. I sense it turning here, Carl. I can't put my name on a date or whatever. If I could, I'd be wealthy 10 times already, because I could have done it in 87 and 2000 and everything. But are we reaching the end here? I suspect we are. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, if you remember probably 3 or 4 months ago, I said, look out somewhere around the middle of this coming year, this year, now. Because that's just the lag time that these things tend to have. And that was, you know, they were throwing, you know, God and everything in the way of money at the COVID thing and just, you know, basically flushing the system with cash. And what I heard in Powell's press conference was unbelievable. All right, I mean, the amount of bond buying that he's, you know, he says he's committed to doing, it's already showing up in the producer prices. It's showing up in the CPI. It's not showing up, you know, not in the ways that he wants to count it. But you look at RBOB, you look at copper, you look at, you know, you look at the basic things that people have to buy, and that pressure is there. And then the other thing that goes along with this is that the stuff that is going on right now with GameStop and some of these other stocks, this is exactly the same sort of thing that was going on in the middle of late 1999.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And you know, and I was trading it at the time, and I had people that were telling me, oh, yeah, you know, Cisco to the moon, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and Cisco actually had a product. I mean, GameStop, let's face it, the place, you know, is essentially a pawn shop for game cartridges now, because almost all video games are delivered digitally. So what is their forward business? But leaving that aside, there was situation like this after situation. They came, they went, some of them blew up, and then all of a sudden out of the middle of nowhere in March, you know, we know what happened in 2000. And you can actually point to MicroStrategy, which as a company is still around, that was maybe the pinprick that set it off. But there were 20 of them in front of that didn't set it off. And I some people asking me, well, you know, isn't this going to do it when this one pops? And I said, don't be so sure. But do keep your eye on the door, because when this kind of cycle starts, yeah, you're getting to the point that the Fed has gone too far, the federal government has gone too far fiscally. They're trying to make it so that nobody ever loses, and what ends up happening is virtually everybody does.
Well, the headline the other day was the Fed can't change the tune at all because it might roil the market. Well, yeah, but at least in 99, you had a reason to pour money into the system, at least somewhat of one, because of Y2K. Right.
Well, yeah, but they say that they've got a reason now because of COVID.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying there's no reason now, but that was the technical reason then, right? It wasn't just same thing as COVID. They felt they had a reason, but the difference is is the magnitude. I don't get how. I mean, I went back. Boy, if you ever want to go to sleep fast, Carl, I have a book. You might be the only guy on earth that has this. Do you have a copy of The Monetary History of the United States by Milton Friedman?
No, I do not. But I am aware of it. Yeah.
That thing is so detailed. How the hell those guys even put he and Claire Friedland put together? They must have had an army of guys trying to get their doctorates working on this thing for them. Every page has got like I didn't. Do you ever know what power money or power money was? It's before they had M2, they called stuff power money. It was gold deposits. Anyway, there are all kinds of these different terms that I can't even. It takes me like a half hour to read a page. We last year 25% money supply growth. The worst we ever did in World War II was like 12.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I mean, it's double. It's not about keeping things liquid. It's about keeping prices there for some people. It's a class thing. It's not. It's, it, you know, you and I, if we were in that job, we'd say we have to put enough money in the system where the system maintains its integrity. Where you can still trade stocks, you can still get credit, you can still get a mortgage loan. You and I would be all over that. But that's different from saying we have to put enough money in to make sure the stock market's up 20% this year because those people want me to do it. I don't, where did that come from? That to me is the same chapter as senators and representatives coming out of their millionaires. I mean, where did that come from, right?
Well, it's nuts. And the problem is, you know, what I've tried to point out to people is that if you think that you're not going to see your base cost of living up by 25 to 50% over the next 5 years,
I think we just lost them.
Absolutely going to happen. Well, that's in real terms.
Well, if I was in the news conference, and I don't never be asked back, we only got like 10 seconds, I would ask the chairman to ramp, go back his 20 years where he said there's no inflation, move the medical costs from 5% of the basket to 19% where it ought to be, and he'd have all the inflation he wants.
Right.
Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Have a good weekend. Drive safe. Yeah, actually had a pretty good signal out of there. SP futures down 13, not anywhere near the 40 they were. NASDAQ futures down 53, not near the 100 they were. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.